Hey team, welcome to the Professionally Offensive Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Cabrera. This is the spot where we provide raw, unfiltered insights from some amazing guests. Stand by, you're about to be offended in all the right ways. All right, team, welcome back to the show. Today we're going to continue our series on the art of war. If you haven't listened to the first episode, please do so. I think you'll get a lot out of it. We cover the weight of big decisions and how it applies not only to warfare, but how it applies to business, family, personal, professional, and all the things in between. Again, on this series, the idea here is to cover a book that I refer to quite a bit, The Art of War by Sun Tzu. And what this book has done for me is not only helped me during times of combat and warfare, but really I see it as a guiding light, a reference point that I come back to, even as I think about business, how to be a mindful person, how to be a proactive leader, and how to think about decisions that we're faced with every day. It really boils things down super simple. And what I wanted to be able to do here is cover some of the important excerpts and different content that I think will be helpful to you. So on today, as we continue through our series, we're going to cover two chapters on this one. Now, I'm not going to read them through because this will take a little bit of time. It's a quick read, but what I want to focus on is segments of these chapters. And the two chapters that we're going to cover today is a chapter called Waging War, and the second one is called Strategic Offense. I boil it down to two things. The waging war really is about thinking about enabling execution, right? We always talk about execution, get it done. But there's a way to sustain that execution and be able to ensure that as you create that violence of action, that it's able to sustain, especially during trying times. Some of us would call it logistics. So we're going to talk about that. And then the second piece here we're going to go into is strategic offense. This to me comes down to talent, comes down to how you think about people, how you enable leaders, and just the forces at play that can prevent us from reaching a state of good decision-making. As a quick example, we're going to cover a little bit about, or I should say as a sneak peek, we're going to cover how this applies to CEO board of directors or C-suite and management teams or vice president levels and directors, right? How are you enabling your leaders to actually carry things forward, and how that talent and the people involved in the human capital of making this stuff go forward and getting these objectives done, how's everybody interacting, right? And then this is really about attacking the strategy. And we're going to talk about that as well on strategic offense and just being proactive about how we think about strategy. To be frank, I think a lot of us think of strategy as this really elevated, high-level thinking, and a lot of us almost feel entitled or elitist in the way that we think about strategy. What I really like about the way that we're going to cover this topic, there's a humility, and there's actually a very straightforwardness about how we think about strategy. All right, so let's dive in. A couple excerpts here. We're going to read through them first, and then we're going to go recap on some of them here. First one, waging war. In war, victory should be swift. If victory is slow, men tire, morale sags, sieges exhaust strength, protracted campaigns strain the public treasury. I have heard that in war, haste can be folly, but have never seen delay that was wise. The skillful warrior never conscripts troops a second time, never transports provisions a third. He brings equipment from home, but forages off the enemy, and so his men have plenty to eat. Supplying an army at a distance drains the public coffers and impoverishes the common people. All right, so let's recap a couple parts here. That first one there, in war, victory should be swift. If victory is slow, men tire. Another one of those moments where you go, well, of course that's true. But how many times have we been involved in initiatives that just go on and on and on, right? You can think about meetings you've probably sat in where folks are like, well, we just need a couple more months, right? Or we just need to be able to endure it for a couple more years. Or we just need some more capital to keep us alive a little longer. There's definitely a fine line between endurance and being able to see something through and being too stubborn to know when it is that your momentum is gone, right? And that you're not able to move swiftly. And I think that's the important piece there, is that it's not talking about fast, but it is talking about swift. And the way that I see that, the way that I think about those things are, is when you go out to attack a problem, when you go out to initiate a new product in the environment, when you go out to set a personal PR, whatever that might be, your goal should be swift. There should be a direct plan of action and an outcome that you're trying to reach, and then you're supposed to attack that with as much strength and violence as you can. The reason that's important is because that not only creates clarity as you're attacking and pushing on to those objectives, but it creates momentum. When you see momentum lagging and things taking too long, it's likely because there isn't that gumption that you should have as you're going to move through. There isn't that aggressiveness that comes with being sure of what you need to do and hitting it head on. I've heard that in war, haste can be folly, but I've never seen delay that was wise. Ain't that the truth? We don't want to rush into things blindly or recklessly, but I will say a lot of us tend to overthink something. A lot of us tend to want to look at a spreadsheet over and over again. Maybe three more models will get us there. A lot of us want to re-examine the data over and over again. You know, the mind, the body, and the spirit, and the heart are pretty daggone smart when they're working together. And that thing called an intuition, that thing called a gut, you ought to trust it. There's a lot that comes from that. There's a lot of sophisticated decision-making and factoring in that come in when your gut tells you something. And so oftentimes what I have found is teams wait too long and they delay too long to make a decision. When what they should do is when they got a decent plan, start executing. New inputs will come in. You can adjust. Keep moving. A skillful warrior never conscripts troops and never transports provisions a third. Supplying an army at a distance drains the public coffers and impoverishes the common people. Again, we're talking about a lean towards action and not forcing people to be there. So I see this as never conscripts troops, meaning you don't draft people, right? Don't force employees and teammates and family to come along. Encourage them. Ensure that they want to be there. But also ensure that they have plenty to eat. Ensure that they are well-equipped and resourced to be successful. A lot of the times we just push this idea that, well, you know, we just got to get it done. So I don't really care how everybody's feeling here. We just got to push on. I think there's some validity in sometimes having that get it done mindset. But oftentimes as owners, as entrepreneurs, we can mistake our passion for the same passion that our teammates ought to have. And what really we're mistaking there is the weight we carry is a weight that nobody else will carry. This is something that we have to understand. That's our burden to bear. And it isn't the responsibility of our teammates to bear that weight. It is our responsibility to echo and to explain what that weight is and why it will not only benefit them, but will benefit the sustained execution as we move forward. But a lot of us don't spend the time describing that. A lot of us don't spend the time thinking about that. Instead, we just expect our teammates to understand what we have inherently in us. It's because we're the ones that sign the name on the paper there that if it all goes falling down, we're the ones that got to claim bankruptcy. We're the ones that got to figure out how to repay loans for the rest of our life. And we're the ones that have to figure out how to go manage the risk, not only on the spreadsheets, but in our mind and with our families and all the things. It's tough being an entrepreneur. It's tough being an operator. But that's not something that you should immediately feel entitled that your folks around you are going to know what that feels like. It's your job to do the best you can to resource them. And when they aren't resourced, not to act like that's not what's happening. Sometimes the best thing you can do is tell them, hey, look, I know you're worth more. Hey, I know that we don't have all the things put together. But what I can tell you is that if we get to this point, there will be the ability for us to reset and to continue to encourage and increase our resourcing. But without that, you're really just forcing a ball uphill that nobody ultimately wants to carry. are we going to be moving on here to strategic offense? In war, better take a state intact than destroy it. Better take an army, a regiment, a detachment, a company intact than destroy them. Ultimate excellence lies not in winning every battle, but in defeating the enemy without ever fighting. The highest form of warfare is to attack strategy itself. The lowest form of war is to attack cities. Siege warfare is a last resort. There are five essentials for victory. Know when to fight and when not to fight. Understand how to deploy large and small numbers. Have officers and men who will share a single will. Be ready for the unexpected. Have a capable general, unhampered by his sovereign. Cool chapter there. Easy read. Let's recap. In war, better take a state, better take an army, better take a regiment, a detachment intact than destroy it. Any of y'all ever done mergers and acquisitions, integrated a new team, adopted a family member? Oftentimes, we're there to destroy the will and the mindset and the humanness of what we're about to embark on. Then recognize, or I should say we forget to recognize, that that individual, that company, that product, that employee, that team, that new income line, as some of us look at it, as opposed to teammates that we're bringing on during a mergers and acquisition, those new teammates have value, a lot of value. And that value is only useful if it's still intact. If we go out there and have them submit to our will and destroy them, well, all we've accomplished is simply putting a W on the board. But that's where it stops. We're not going to actually be able to get further than that. So the rookie warrior is going to go out there and destroy, pillage, and burn. The expert warrior is first going to think about going to war to begin with, and if that's the right thing to do or not. And if it is, they're going to do the best they can to create the least damage they can. Because the least damage means that they can endure and salvage and encourage and nurture the goodness that comes with acquiring the spoils, I guess you could say, but really the goodness that comes from what you have around us. So there have been many examples of folks that have had mergers and acquisitions, and that new subsidiary feels misplaced, feels ostracized. The parent company didn't do a great job about ensuring those things are synced up. It's not simply a revenue line. Take it intact so you can use it. Ultimate excellence lies not in winning every battle, but defeating the enemy without ever fighting. The highest form of warfare is to attack strategy itself. Something we forget, I think pride can take over in a lot of things we do in life. What's interesting is that oftentimes we are more concerned with being right than winning. Being right is where pride takes a hold of us, right? So we can go out there and puff our chest out and make other people feel like we have all the right answers. We're the smartest one in the room. But winning sometimes, a lot of the times, takes a lot of maturity, patience, and virtue to stand back and go, you know what, this fight ain't worth it. Because that's ultimately not what's going to be the best for both sides here. And when you attack the strategy itself, it really gives you clarity about where your priorities are and what it ultimately means to win. The last time I checked, winning meant that all sides felt that the right outcome had occurred. If only one side feels that way, then I think you have a misalignment in your strategy and your objectives and what it takes to feel good about yourself at the end of the day. Whether it's a football game, a soccer game, or whatever sport you have, when the other side loses, unless there was an unfair call by a referee or something catastrophic or completely unethical, for the most part, if they lose, they kind of know they deserve to lose. There's a fairness in that. When it's not fair, or when it doesn't feel that way, is when you decide to not think about the strategy itself and instead just decide for pride to get in the way. The lowest form of war is to attack cities, and siege warfare is a last resort. It's just a cool reminder that don't do the thing that an immature person would do. Think about what it is that you're doing before you decide to get rid of that entire team, blow up on a family member, or be childish about your reactions. Think about what you're doing. Think about what type of person you want to be. There are five essentials for victory. Know when to fight and when not to fight. Well, that makes a lot of sense. That's that pride thing getting in the way, though, oftentimes when we do want to fight. Understand how to deploy large and small numbers. A lot of us want to get fancy about the big stuff, but we forget that the small tactical things, the small movements, the small initiative, the small compliments, the things that don't seem like a big deal go a long way. And being good at those is just as good as being good at the big stuff. Have officers and men who share a single will. You ever had a team that didn't get along? You ever had a leader that you knew was not great, but you either didn't have the guts to fire them, move them, or you just didn't know it because you weren't involved and you wonder why that team wasn't really operating well? Or vice versa. You have a great leader and you gave them a bunch of folks that quite frankly are incompetent and they can't do the things. They're there for a paycheck. They're not there because for any other reason. Did you do a great job setting up that leader for success? Those kinds of things. If they have share a single will, they can take on mountains. Be ready for the unexpected. Have a capable general unhampered by his sovereign. I think that might be the coolest line, or one of the coolest lines in this whole book. Have a general, a capable general, unhampered by his sovereign. What's that mean? First of all, have a leader of leaders, the CEO, the founder, the entrepreneur, the operator, the father, the mother, whoever. Make sure they're good to go. Make sure they're strong. Make sure they're capable. Make sure they're competent. Put the right person in the right seat at the right time. But most importantly, ensure that they are unhampered by their sovereign, or unhampered by their board of directors, or unhampered by their investors, or unhampered by the other parent company. Oftentimes, we have great leaders put in a situation they cannot win. And the reason they can't win is because of company politics, because the board doesn't let that CEO do what it is that they were put there to do. There's a lot of micromanaging. There's a lot of inputs. That football coach can't really run his team because the booster club's out there and the booster parents are out there telling them what to do. If you put somebody in a role, then trust them to execute that role. If they're not, then have consequences very clearly laid out on what happens when they don't execute. It's really that simple. But oftentimes, we don't even let those things play out. How can we trust our intuition and gut for putting a leader in a role and then not allow them to do that work? And I don't know about you, but it's exhausting micromanaging capable people. If they're capable, then get out of their way. All right, y'all. That's it for this series. And on this chapter, or a couple chapters here of The Art of War, we're going to continue this series just like this on a lot of different inputs. This series hopefully captured for you and added value on the logistics and sustaining execution, and then also what it takes really to put the right people in the right place and how it is you should think about weighing in on tweaking and moving strategy as it pertains to not only warfare, but it pertains to actually winning in life and in professional world in your company, right? How is it that you're winning, right? And are you really setting the conditions right to win, or are you just more infatuated and more worried about being right? All right, y'all. That's all I got, and we'll see you on the high ground. Thanks for tuning in. We want to hear from you, so do me a solid. Leave us a review. We read every comment. If you got value from what you heard today, please subscribe, give us a thumbs up, share it with a friend. Thanks for being on the team. We'll see you on the high ground. JC out.